And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, you ever read the Constitution of the United States?
I've had occasion to. I remember I did go to law school.
Do you have to read the Constitution in law school?
Well, you read, there's significant parts of it that you read, and I've also read parts and discussed parts because, you know, I write articles and op-eds about it, so, you know, sometimes I get into stuff that most people don't realize is in it.
If I use chess terms, I would say you're a pazza with the Constitution.
I'm not sure what chess. I'm not a chess aficionado. I know more about the Constitution than chess.
A patsa in Yiddish is a guy who messes around with something.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, in any case, what I'm getting at is, what did you make, I don't know if you noticed this, but what did you make of Alito's recent comment this week? And I think he wrote two articles and was interviewed to make the point that Congress has no right to regulate the Supreme Court.
Well, there's two aspects. There's the legal aspect and there's the political aspect. As far as the legal aspect goes, you know, if you wrote that as an answer to a question on a constitutional law exam, you would get a failing grade. That it's just patently untrue. The Supreme Court is discussed primarily in Article 3. You know, we have this thing about the three branches of government and how they are supposed to interact and act as somewhat of checks and balances on each other. But Article 3 is much shorter than Article 1 and Article 2. Article 1 is the power of Congress and the setting up of Congress. That's the longest one because the founders thought that was the most important. And Article 2 is the executive branch. But Article 3 is pretty short for the most part. And it says very little about the Supreme Court. It gives it some things to do, some original, what we call original jurisdiction. But most of it's left up to Congress. It says it shall have jurisdiction as Congress gives them. It doesn't even talk about the number of justices for the Supreme Court.
And in fact, the number of justices on the Supreme Court has changed, right? Two or three times.
I think more like four or five times. The original, right. I think, was six. And it's been seven. It's been ten. It's been nine. You know, now it's been nine for... that's been nine, not be nine. for, you know, over 100 years. In what they had, and you know, there's certain things. You know, giving them jurisdiction is certainly one of the big parts about it. It tells them what they can or cannot hear or do. The main thing is that the one thing Congress can't do is diminish their salary during their terms. But beyond that, there's not a lot of. You know, there is a lot what Congress can do.
So why does Alito make this point? Alito may be a vicious reactionary, but he's not a fool. Why does he bother to make this point?
Well, that's the political. First of all, he made this point in a right-wing editorial newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, which is where he writes. You know, we have these justices going around saying we're not political, but they're only, for the most part, addressing right-wing organizations and right-wing media. So that has to be said. There's a couple of things. I think that they may be getting scared of certain things, but they're, which would be a good thing, I think. But they're also... This is arrogance. And what's happened, you know, there's the old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, is they've been, you know, arrogating to themselves such power and statements that, you know, I think that he thinks that it's beyond criticism of this, or he's trying to establish something that would be beyond actions of Congress. And he's only exacerbating the situation. You know, you think that they, after what happened, you know, in the overturning of Roe and with the revelations of the conflicts of interest and the ethical violations, that they would, you know, want to dial down the rhetoric. You know, they go away for the summer and they want people not to be thinking of them. And lo and behold, he's only inflaming this situation. By the way, Sheldon Whitehouse, the senator from Rhode Island, is not going to let this go. You're going to see a clash of things.
And, what's he going to do? What's he said?
Well, I think that there's going to, well, there, you know, he and Dick Durbin are pushing through an ethics bill for the Supreme Court. You know, the Supreme Court's the only court in the country that doesn't have a code of conduct specifically for them.
Let's assume for the sake of argument they get it through the Congress. I know they won't get it through the House, but assume the House, not in this session, but in some session, they get it through the Congress. What if the court decides it's unconstitutional?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things about that. Number one, you probably correctly said they won't get through the Congress. You know, when they passed the bill out of the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and not a single Republican voted for this. That's a pretty good campaign issue for the Democrats. You know,
it would be if they made it an issue.
Yeah, but you know, the Republicans don't want judicial reform because the American people really do want this. I mean, that's they call that almost what used to be referred to as an Ed Schultz poll question. You know, Ed Schultz used to, the late Ed Schultz used to have these, when he was on MSNBC, these polls that were always 95 to 3, you know, or something like that, with two no opinions. Do you want to have a code of ethics, or should the Supreme Court have a code of ethics like all other courts? You know, it polls very, very high. And it's inversely proportional to the loss of confidence in the Supreme Court by the public that polling shows. So,
well, naturally, the less confidence you have, the more you want them restricted.
Right. So anyway, so that's the first thing to be said about this. Congress, because as I mentioned, they can give or take away jurisdiction. I mean, if they really wanted to get a little bit nastier, more controversial, they could put in a provision that the Supreme Court shall have no power to review this.
Right.
And you know, shall not have no jurisdiction over reviewing this. That would really, you know, because that blatantly uses the words of the Constitution, you know,
right,
reset type of thing. So, you know, we have that that situation. And if the Supreme Court, you know, again, the political, are they really going to say, we don't want a code of ethics? And we're willing to tell the country that we shouldn't be under an ethics code. I think that they, you know, that these six justices probably would go for that, saying we're not going to let Congress determine this, and watch their standing go even further. And the reason I say that is because they haven't done it so far. You know, it's been years that they've been asking Roberts, the Chief Justice, and the members of the court to put together a judicial code of ethics, and they've steadfastly refused. And now we have all these things coming out, you know, the Harlan Crow stuff with Justice Thomas and Alito's things. And this week, you know, you mentioned the New York Times had an article about their book writing. All right. You know, matter of fact, there is a law that limits their income to their salaries plus $30,000 from outside work. Usually it's professorships or speaking fees. And by the way, that's one of the things that people were really upset about, because they get, you get a gig over in Italy, and you get a full paid for vacation over there, and they pay you $10,000 or something. But the other thing about this is that's exempt from that that law is if you write a book and you sell the book, you have unlimited income in that regard. And the
why is that? That's just because it is, or is there some logic behind that?
Well, it's your work product besides being a justice.
But if you're limited, if the justice is limited to 30,000 additional income, that's right, presumably for his work. So how do you balance that against an $1 million advance?
It's a huge loophole in the law.
Oh, a loophole. Oh, okay.
The thing about this is that apparently the justices were using clerks to do some research, which means that you and I and everybody else in America is paying people to help them gain private income. And I had read that in some instances the clerks or the office of the Supreme Court would set up their calendars to go out and have book signing events or book speaking events, which they'd sell more books. This is, has a taint to it. And that is not just the conservative justices. That's just not Alito and Thomas. Sotomayor and Kagan have taken advantage of that stuff as well.
Well, if there's no rule against it, then I suppose everybody feels justified in doing it.
Yeah, but again, like I said, it has caused the loss of confidence among the public. So we have that. But there, like I said, it goes back to their power play, their arrogance. We can do this and nobody can stop us. The old phrase.
And could anybody stop them? I mean, it's interesting.
Well, that's the thing. As long as the Republicans would control one house of Congress, there's nobody to stop them. But
the obverse is in front of our nose as well. The Supreme Court told Alabama they had to change the electoral map. They had to draw a map that would have an additional black majority district. And the legislature in Alabama said, screw you, we're not doing it. And they didn't do it. And nobody can stop them from not doing it.
It's going back to the courts, but
I suppose it could go back to the court forever. But if they don't do it, they don't do it.
Yeah, well, that happened in Ohio under state law with the state Supreme Court, where they told them the legislature 5 times you've got an illegal gerrymand, and they kept passing more illegal gerrymands, and the Supreme Court wouldn't do anything about it, or couldn't do anything about it. You know, we had that famous phrase from the 1830s where Andrew Jackson had a row with the Supreme Court and said that supposedly the Chief Justice has made his decision, now let him try to enforce it. That's a question. You know, the Congress could do other things they can't diminish their salaries, but they sure as heck can diminish other things flowing to the court.
They could turn the heat off in the building.
They could take away their clerks.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You know, say we're not giving you a line item in the budget for clerkships. We're only going to pay you guys for your salaries. Now function, you know?
Right. But that's a different political system. Circumstance. I mean, you'd have to have a very different political situation than the one that's foreseeable.
Yeah.
So that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So we'll have to see how this plays out. As I said, Sheldon Whitehouse is not letting this go. And we'll see if the Democrats can exploit this. I think it's a good campaign issue for them. It's not the highest time priority, but it's a good one.
Well, relationship between the political world and the legal world brings to mind something Trump did. this last week. His lawyers went into court on the documents case and said that despite the fact that the law says that these secret documents, these top secret documents, can only be viewed in a secure facility under the supervision of a special security officer, he wants permission to be able to view them at Mar-a-Lago because it's too inconvenient for him to go to a secure facility. How about that?
Yeah, well, that was that's one of his defenses, I guess, to this thing. You know, my inconvenience allowed me to flash these around whenever I wanted to.
Yeah, he is above the law. The law applies to you, but not to me.
Well, we'll see how the judge handles that.
Well, I think that's a big test for this judge, Aileen. What's your name?
Cannon.
Cannon, right.
Yeah. Well, but now she just got a break because the special prosecutor has delivered a superseding indictment and brought in a new party to this so that... that May trial date is most likely now to have gone.
It would have been gone anyway. Trump would have blown by it one way or the other.
Well, we'll see. You know, but the interesting thing is, you know, the prosecutors. Remember, the prosecutors wanted to have this in December, and it would not surprise me if the judge went back and said, "Hey, if you knew you were going to be indicting this third person, why did you ask for December?" You knew that, that couldn't happen if you made this superseding indictment.
Maybe they didn't
if she
know.
Wants to, well, they certain.
What would be the effect of her doing it? I mean, supposing she did that.
Well, it would just be sort of undermining the prosecution a little bit, saying that they don't play fair.
Well, so they don't play fair, right?
Yeah, but it'll give Trump a little bit of ammunition. That's what it would
be. Do you think he needs ammunition?
You know, every little bit. He's going to need every little bit. And we'll see. I mean, we had the judge who had some questions about Hunter Biden this week, too, about the prosecution and the deal and all that stuff. Another Trump appointee judge, although she wasn't necessarily wrong in some of her questioning on that. So we'll see. But, you know, we want to talk about the Senate and the judiciary and the Judiciary Committee. We had that that instance this week. We actually had it with both Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein. That they both exhibited certain health issues, probably related to their age. She was in another committee, an Appropriations Committee meeting, and apparently lost track of what they were doing and couldn't focus enough to cast her vote and had to be essentially prompted by several people just to say the word "I." But the
but she was able to say it.
Well,
that beats McConnell.
McConnell was had either a seizure or a mini stroke in front of the microphones. But I want to get back to Feinstein because people say, well, why doesn't she resign? Because she would be replaced by a Democrat. Gavin Newsom would have the power to replace her. However, under the Senate rules, she could not be replaced on the Judiciary Committee without the Republicans' consent. And therefore, that committee would then become a tie, and they would not be able to move things forward. So for that little bitty reason...
And why would the Republicans have the veto power?
I think it may have to be in the rules of the way the committees were set up.
At the beginning of the session.
Yes, at the beginning of the session. Mm-hmm. And of course, McConnell is the guy who would determine that.
If he were awake.
Yeah, well, yeah. In days of yore, this was never going to be a problem. There were senatorial courtesies that happened. But McConnell, ever since Obama became president, has become this chief obstructionist to anything moving through that Judiciary Committee. And so they're not going to do that.
So let me ask you this. In that case, does that mean that this logjam would exist only up until December 31st, but that in January she could resign?
No, because the it would be until January 1st of 2025 to the end of her term, because that's when this there's no senatorial elections this year. When they adjourn, it's an interim adjournment. It's not a a final adjournment. So that
could they make it a final adjournment?
No, I don't think so. So that's
so the Democrats are saddled with Feinstein forever.
At least through
Biden's term.
Through this term, yeah. But their things are going through. You know, they get more judgeships through. We had another judgeship in before the panel this week in the Middle District of Pennsylvania here, Caroline Michalczyk, who's currently a magistrate judge, not a Article III judge. And she had a rough going. They quizzed her. They didn't have a vote yet on getting her out of committee. She'll probably get out of committee and be confirmed. But this is politics. This is politics on that.
Meanwhile, Tommy Turbeville, the coach, maintains his hold.
Yes.
And now this week it was revealed that this paragon of virtue, this great defender of the military and so on and so forth, lied about almost every aspect of his father's military service to boost his own reputation. He's the son of such a great hero. He made his father a tank commander. He wasn't. He made his father an invader on D-Day. He didn't. He had his father win 5 Bronze Stars. Never happened. Even Audie Murphy didn't win 5 Bronze Stars. So here's a guy who can't tell the truth about anything. But he's the defender of virtue. Politicians are looked down upon.
Yeah, well, but at least he could say it wasn't me, that I was, it was my father.
It was my father.
Unlike George Santos, you know, and that other fellow, I forget who it is.
The guy in Alabama.
In Alabama, yeah. But, you know, but again, this is another thing where senatorial courtesies or senatorial procedures won't allow them to bypass, to let this guy bollocks up the whole United States military. And
I think it's happening also with the State Department.
Yeah, yeah, these appointments. And I don't know if the Democrat, I have to believe that if Mitch McConnell was in the majority and somebody and Bob Casey or somebody was in the minority and was bollocksing this thing up, McConnell would find a way to get around it.
So why doesn't
Schumer?
Why doesn't Schumer do it?
Well, you'll have to ask Chuck. You'll have to ask Chuck.
Well, I was by his house the other day, but I didn't see him.
Well, and now Congress is now out of session until September.
That's an outrage. Isn't that an outrage? And when they come back, the first order of business will be defunding the government.
Yeah.
Which is going to happen. They made a deal. The Republicans made a deal. It lasted exactly one day when they reneged on the deal.
Well, they've got, that was slightly different. That was to extend the debt limit, but didn't extend the funding within the debt limit. And remember, Congress is only supposed to be back for 3 weeks before adjourning again. We have that.
But it'd be, what do you mean supposed to be? They're supposed to run the country. That's what they're supposed to do.
Sure.
If God forbid, they should have to spend some part of August at work.
Yeah. No wonder. Well, no wonder so many people have been leaving over the years. But, of course, you still have a lot of people who want to be there.
I'd like to be there. I'd like to get paid without having to go into the office.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Jim Bognet wants to be there. There were rumors that he wanted to run a third time against Matt Cartwright. I saw this week where he took a job in the private sector as a political consultant, teaching people supposedly how to win elections.
He's never won an election.
No. He's run a couple campaigns for other people, and he's run two for himself, and he's never won. But, hey, there's always a first time. So we'll see what happens.
So they say some WAG once said that if you can't do, teach, right?
Yeah.
So is that Bognet? He can't win, so he teaches people how to win?
Well, he teaches people how he thinks they can win.
But he's already shown he doesn't know how.
It doesn't. Well, we'll see how many people hire him. I think it's just a vehicle for him to raise some money before, you know, having another shot at the race. So we'll have to see that. And, you know, I talked about people leaving the Congress. I saw where Abigail Spangberger down in Virginia, who was in one of those really tight races last time and won, is going to be leaving. She wants to run for governor of Virginia. You know, Virginia's one of those states where you only have a one-term governor, and it's always elected. They in New Jersey elect the year after the presidential race. They're the only two states, and it's seen as a harbinger. Of course, Glenn Youngkin, who tried to portray himself as a moderate but was really a hard right guy, won as a Republican in 2021. So she I think wants to be the next governor, which would turn it back to the Democrats. And
does she have a chance of winning?
Preliminarily, it seems like she might. The Democrats are going to be very united after the Youngkin thing. And
is she a more appealing candidate than the previous Democratic candidate who had been the governor?
Yeah. I mean, you know, he was, he shouldn't have run. They shouldn't have nominated him, but they did, you know. And there's a guy with too much ego and not enough political sense, and he blew the election. Anyway, didn't recognize the issue about schools. Youngkin was able to outmaneuver him there. But Spangberger, yeah, I think she'd be a much better candidate. And don't forget that the lieutenant governor of Virginia, who might be the Republican nominee, is pretty far out, dude. So
way far out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you have a cousin who's a member of the House of Legislature, the Legislative House?
Yeah. Kathy Tran. She's married to my cousin. She's a member of the House of Delegates. She won her she was uncontested in her primary. So
she has a safe seat.
I think it's a pretty safe seat, but she doesn't take anything for granted. So we'll see.
Have you asked her about Stansberger? And
no, I haven't, because this came out too late during the week. Uh-huh. And so I haven't had a chance to ask. I might ask her father-in-law, who I'm in touch with on a regular basis.
All right, we want a first-hand report from Virginia next week.
A report from, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. How's that one?
That'll be good. That'll be good, because we're done for this week. So we might as well inform people that next week you'll hear it here for the first time.
Okay. All right. Well, try to stay cool and have a good week.
Have a good week. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.